participate. It is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker, Nikki from Visalia.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Nikki and I'm an alcoholic.
Nikki.
Come on in. Yeah, super grateful to be here. So a couple statistics. I have sobriety date of May 29th of 2014, and today I have 8 years of uninterrupted sobriety. And don't laugh. It's not me, it's God. It's God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just keep showing up. You know, it's my job is to keep showing up. I have a sponsor. Her name is Pat T. I have God in my understanding that I really don't understand. I just know it's not me today. And I struggled with that a lot when I first came in the rooms of AA. You know, I couldn't discern between religion and spirituality and was very conflicted. And today I have found my way to make peace with that. I have two women's home groups, the Saturday morning women's 12 and 12, and also the Tuesday night women's Amity Online. I stick with the women, and they told me early on to stick with the winners, and that's what I've continued to do. I'll start from the beginning. It's supposed to be, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. You know, I will tell you that never in my wildest dreams did I ever imagine my life could be so good. Just going to give you a little warning. I cry all these years later. I'm still very emotional with gratitude and humility. I just can't believe it. Just can't believe it, you know? I took my first drink at 12. And it was a blackout drunk. And way before I picked up a drink, I was a thief, I was a liar, and I was a manipulator, and I was self-centered because the world revolved around me. I had this thing that everybody owed me something. My dad was killed when I was 4 years old, and I carried that around in a knapsack. I was mad at God, and I was mad at everybody else because I just couldn't understand what kind of a God would do that to me, my dad. And it's an interesting thing. My sister, she lost her dad too, and she's not an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because when I drink, I can't stop. You know, it's plain and simple. My story involves, the big book talks about any form of alcohol and keeping with the singleness of purpose, I limit it to alcohol. If you're curious about what those forms are, feel free to see me after the meeting, but I follow the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe that I was given good upbringing, and I honor that. I was non-discriminatory in the alcohol that I used. If it affected the way I felt, I ingested it. You know, I didn't care. I remember, it's funny, I stole these chrome caps. I think I was like 8 or 9. And I went to school and I had a bag of them. They're a little tire chrome caps. I don't know what to do with them, right? But I went to school and I had this baggie and I was like, look, you know, I stole them. People were like, what are they? I was like, I don't know, but I stole them. Like, I was so excited. And that sense of entitlement that I could take other people's stuff without punity followed me through my life, you know? Look, I'm not here to talk about, like, you know, we all have skeletons in the closet. Nobody grows up in this perfect little picket fence stuff, but that's not why I'm an alcoholic. Why I'm an alcoholic is because when I drink, it changes the way that I feel, and the obsession and craving develop. And that's it, you know? I drank when I was 12, and I it was like that warm, fuzzy blanket. Like, I just, you know, I was short. I felt like I never fit in. I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't tall enough. I wasn't enough. And when I drank, it didn't matter. And that's the honest truth of it, you know. And what I've realized is that low self-esteem is one of my character defects. You know, it's not anything that's inherently wrong with me. It's just a character defect that I never thought I was good enough, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love myself. So I didn't, like, go to school every day after that. I think it was in seventh grade. It's like a backpack full of gin or anything, you know. But what I did is I obsessed about the feeling, and I craved the next time that I could drink, and I planned it. You know, I mean, I got sent to boarding school because, you know, at 12, 13 years old, I was incorrigible. You know, I hung out with people who drank like me, and if you didn't drink like me, I didn't have anything to do. So I had one friend in high school, and she drank like I did, you know. And graduated high school. I went to college. I did a lot of geographic tours when I was, like 18, 19. I swear my car knew, like, on cruise control by heart from Ohio to Florida. My mom had gotten married, and they got a divorce, and my stepdad, he lived in Florida, so, like, I would bail. Things got too bad. You know, I'm from Ohio, so I've been out here in California for about 3 years. But when things would get bad, I would jump in my car and pack everything in my Chevy Cavalier, and I would head down 95, and I'd go to my dad's. And stuff would get bad down there, and I'd jump in my car, and I'd move back to my mom's, you know. It's like, that was just, I just, but the problem is, wherever I went, there I was. Like, I, you know, I was still there. So the problem was always there, me. You know, I finally settled down a little bit, and I got into a nursing program, and the problem is that I majored in alcoholism, and I minored in nursing. Like, I always joke, like, it took me 8 years to get out of college, and I remember telling my mom, like, I was actually going to graduate. She was like, no way, you know. But, you know, I struggled. I had to take a break from college. I was failing out because of my drinking, and soon afterwards, I found out I was pregnant. And, you know, there are some women who are like, oh, I just want to have a bunch of children, and I want to be a mom. That wasn't me, because I knew it was going to interfere with my drinking. I mean, at the heart of it, I knew. And, you know, I was just so selfish and self-centered, but God did for me what I really was unable to do for myself. And I, you know, I brought this beautiful little girl into the world. You know, I didn't drink while I was pregnant, and that was God. That wasn't me, because I thought about it every day. I worked in a Mexican restaurant, and I saw all these margaritas being served, and I just wanted to lick the rim of a glass. Like, that was the crazy, like, just the thought, you know, of that untreated alcoholism that I carried around with me. And so, you know, I mean, like, I planned this. I was going, I'm going to get to the hospital, and I want every legal drug in the place they could give me, and I want the ladies next to me, because she's really not going to need it as bad as I am. Doesn't she know? You know, like, I had plans, and I did end up, you know, going home with a prescription, and once again, the bear was woke. And it was just a matter of time, you know. You know, I always say my daughter was my first hostage, and shortly after, my mom introduced me to this guy who's going to be a good guy. You should marry him. He's going to, you know, selfish and self-centered. Nikki, I didn't care for him, but I married him because of the things that he was going to give me, you know. And, you know, I took him as a hostage. And I, of course, then, because of my feelings of guilt and resentment, I didn't want to be with him. But what I saw as a babysitter, I saw the brand new Jeep sitting in my driveway, and I saw the brand new home that he built me. The problem was, is that I drank every night. I stayed out every night. And, you know, here he is, he's home with my daughter, you know. And that came to an end 13 months later. You know, he says, I don't know where you're going to go, but you're going to go somewhere, and I'm going to help you, because you can't stay here, and I can't do this. You know, and we did. We went and got a dissolution, and, you know, I've since made amends to him several times. You know, he had no idea what he was signing up for. He really didn't. And so, of course, like, I don't know if anybody else can relate, but I figured the reason that relationship didn't work is because he didn't drink. And so I met my next hostage sitting in a bar stool next to me. And, you know, we proceeded to almost kill each other. And he died of alcoholism in 2014. He couldn't find a room in these, a seat in these rooms. And, you know, we had a relationship, and the center of it was alcohol. The rest of it was, you know, occasionally we were friends. Most of the time we weren't. We drank together, you know. And, you know, shortly after I had graduated from nursing school, and I got a job at the hospital, and, you know, I was a nurse, and they dispensed alcohol out of a machine. All I had to do was put my thumb on it. And I proceeded every day that I worked for 5 years to drink on the job, drink before work, come to work hungover, get called in while I had been drinking, and only by God's grace did I never kill anybody. Only by God's grace. You know, I worked so hard for that nursing license. Like, it was all I ever wanted to be was a nurse. And I just so carelessly threw that you know, aside. In May of 2007, I was called into the director of nursing's office and sent down to human resources and escorted off the property by security. And you would have thought normal people would be like, wow, I think I have a problem, you know. And what I did is I just said I just made mistakes. I was sloppy. And I got in my car and I went to the bar, you know. I thought alcohol is for people under bridges. I thought they were people with paper bags. I thought they were dirty. And until I was the one that was evicted, until my car had been repossessed out of my driveway, until I was homeless, and I told my daughter we were camping. We weren't camping. We were living in a camper because we didn't have a place to live. You know, I was that person. Utilities were being turned off. I remember my family saying, like, what is going on? And I was like, nothing. I'm fine. It's just, you know, and they were like, no, you're not. But they really couldn't put their finger on it. They had no idea because, you know, I mean, look, we're good at hiding. You know, I mean, I was, listen, my mom would tell you, my mom is here on Zoom, and, you know, if my lips were moving, I was lying. And, you know, I was just, you know, I was a professional liar. I really was, you know. We get good. We get good at covering our tracks, you know. And so, you know, I lost my job, and I met with the board of nursing, and he said, you know, I have to turn this in. And a long story short, in October 2007, I was served with felony grand indictments for drug theft and illegal processing of drug documents. And I'm going to tell you what my ego said. They don't send girls like me to prison. I'm a nurse. I'm educated. You know, I'm not one of these people that's stealing and what I was better than, okay? And I was not. I was a liability to society. I was a danger to anybody that I came in contact with, and I just couldn't see it. You know, I also thought that if I only drank and did got rid of all the extra forms, that it's legal, right? You drink wine. I even bought an egg timer. I saw this somewhere on Facebook or whatever on social media. If you set an egg timer and you turn that timer off, and when the timer goes off, it's got to stop drinking, and you can get up in the morning and you can go test. You know, everybody's jailhouse lawyers are like, you know, oh, this is the way around it. And the problem was is if I still had alcohol, I still continued to drink. It didn't make a difference if that timer went off, if the sun was coming up, if whatever. And, you know, they were telling me to go to meetings, and I started as my first taste of Alcoholics Anonymous. I drank before I went in. I drank right afterwards. I'm pretty sure I might have been the person that fell out of a chair once or twice because I was plastered. But I came, and they kept telling me to keep coming back, you know, keep coming back. And I remember I went to this one women's meeting, and they never judged me. They never judged me, you know. I couldn't understand it, but, you know, I also couldn't get any clarity either because I couldn't get sober. And so, you know, in my selfishness and self-centeredness, you know, I went to drug court one day because I was told that, you know, if I completed this program, my felonies would go away. And I had a roast in the crock pot. I had a dog tied up in the front yard. And I had parked my truck at a parking meter downtown. My daughter thought I was coming to pick her up from school, and I'm home for 4 years. The judge sentenced me to prison. And I remember calling my mom and saying, this is this huge mistake, it's an injustice, and call my attorney. And she said, what the mistake is that you have a problem and you don't see it. And so I spent 4 years incarcerated. I never spent a day in county jail. I didn't know what, you know, I mean, I'm like, talk about shell shock, you know. And I learned some things. I got some tools. The problem was is that, you know, like, I always joke, like, if you go to school to become a barber, they give you, like, a little bag, and they give you scissors, and they give you clippers and all that stuff, you know. And, like, when you graduate, they give you the bag, and you're like, okay, go cut hair, you know. But if you just say, okay, thanks, I'm good, I don't need those scissors, you know, Edward Scissorhands, I'm going to do it my own way, you know. You don't cut anybody's hair. And that was me. I got the tools. I played AA, but I didn't really do it. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't have a God of my understanding. I didn't work steps. And what I had was untreated alcoholism. And a couple major things happened when I was incarcerated. It was the first time that I was ever without substances ever in my life. Ever. And I think I was 36. Okay, from the time I was 12, so I'm 36, maybe 32. Anyways, first I'm sober, right? Like, I'm physically abstinent. And so I remember doing this 12-step group. One of the biggest revelations I realized is that my sexuality was something completely different than I had really grown up with. And that was kind of profound for me. You know, I had lived my life ashamed of all these things that I thought and that I felt because I never thought that people were going to love me for who I was. And so I hid it and I drank behind it because I didn't want anybody ever to see the real me. And so it was one of the things, now granted, not probably in the best place, right, in a women's prison, but I did kind of come to some clarity about that. But in the process of that, I also met somebody that may not have been the best choice, okay, somebody who I made a higher power and who had perhaps been to the penitentiary maybe 11 times before me. And when I came home, she was my higher power. And so I, my mom laughing, because, you know, like, I had no God, I had no big book, I had no steps. I got a sponsor, her name was Phyllis, and that's the only thing I know about her because I never called her, okay? And so what I did is I had this woman who was a higher power who was drinking and who I just stuck my head in the sand like an ostrich and pretended if I didn't see it, it wasn't happening. And, you know, if you sit in the chair at the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. And boy, did I get my haircut. Because the places that I had gone and the things that I had said I would never do, those imaginary lines in the sand that I said that I would never do, one by one, I erased them off the list, you know. You know, I got a job and, you know, I was doing all right until I started stealing from them. Until then, I was unemployable until I was homeless. And, you know, I lived in the east side of Cleveland, not a very good neighborhood, you know. I shoplifted every day, and, you know, I mean, like, I used to say, like, I don't steal, but the truth of it was, is when I was working as a nurse, I was stealing every day, you know, just because it wasn't money didn't mean I wasn't being dishonest and, you know, and stealing. The culminating thing, the what happened, because I could tell you about all these things, you know, I'm in and out of detox. They would say, go to treatment. I'd say, don't you know how many things I have to do? I can't go to treatment. I can't wait. I can't this. You know, my poor mother is not sleeping because I'm on the streets. You know, one of the times she brings me into her home, she goes to visit my grandmother who is deathly sick in the hospital, and I try to steal her jewelry. And at the same time, she finds the jewelry. She throws me in the car. She drops me off at the inner city of Cleveland, says, get out. You know, because when I drink, I don't care about anything else except the next one. I'm incapable of thinking about anything else except the next drink. You know, and it's unfortunate. My daughter came to visit me every other weekend. My mom brought her up every other weekend for the 4 years that I was incarcerated. She went home crying every time she came to visit me. And I just wanted to see my bed. It was me. So selfish and self-centered. And I come home from prison, and what do you think I did? Do you think I went to see my daughter? No. You know? This poor kid who just came home from school one day when she was 9 years old. But her mom was just gone. You know? So in this process now, I'm really not doing well. I'm drinking every day. The drinking has escalated. I'm, you know, 89 pounds, and I have to drink to just get out of bed. You know, I can't function on my own, and, you know, I shoplifted, and I eluded a theft officer, and I was charged with aggravated felony, one robbery, and felonious assault with a deadly weapon. And, you know, I remember my mom seeing the charges on the computer, and she asked me, who did you kill? Because there were felony ones, you know, and I was like, I shoplifted. She's like, no, you didn't, you know. And still couldn't really understand the gravity of it. And so, you know, I would say, like, I'm going to take myself to detox so I can turn myself in. And I kept saying that, you know, I mean, like, turn yourself in, you come home. I didn't have the same boneheads pick me up that dropped me off at detox. And I was drunk before the time I got home, you know. It just never worked. I had this moment of clarity, and the big book talks about the, you know, that impending sense of doom. And I wanted to kill myself every day, but I don't know about anybody else. I was a coward, you know. And I would hope one day I would just passively die in my sleep. That's what, you know, I figured what a way to go, right? One day I woke up and I didn't want to die. And I wasn't really sure what that was about. I didn't want to be sober, but I didn't want to die. And I remember sending my mom my address to where I was because I knew she was going to show up with the National Guard. and she showed up with, you know, I think there was a marshal around the corner just in case I had changed my mind to turn myself in for my warrants. And that was my what happened. You know, I got to the county jail, and I was sitting outside drinking my coffee this morning, and I was thinking 8 years ago I woke up on the floor of the county jail with a mattress that was about this big. You know, and thinking, how did I get here? How did I get here again? You know, and I called my mom. Two major things happened. I called my mom and I said, hey, I need $25 for you to put on my books because I need some shampoo. Once again, it's all about me. I haven't washed my hair in I don't know how long. I'm surprised I still have any teeth left in my mouth because I surely didn't brush my teeth. I would take a bath because I was scared it was going to sober me up. But I get to the county jail and now all of a sudden I have this entitlement. I should wash my hair and I should take a bath, right? And my mom said, check this out. I'd rather give $10,000 to a bum under a bridge and give you $5 for your books. And I don't know what you're going to do, but figure it out. And if you call me again, I'm going to block it. And if you write them and throw it in the garbage, good luck. And she hung up. And me, I was like, oh, my God. You know, Gassy, how am I going to wash my hair? You know, like, whatever. With a bar of soap, you know, like, whatever. Nobody cares. Yeah. But that was my ego, right? My pride and my ego. And just self-entitlement and self-centeredness. And another, the second most profound thing that came in is there was a lady, Barbara Check, and she doesn't mind using her name. She came in, she said, you know, Nikki, if we quit drinking, we would quit coming to jail. And I don't know why, but for some reason I heard that. And, you know, at this time I'm going back to prison. You know, I couldn't understand it then, but my mom spoke against me at sentencing and begged the judge to send me to prison. So she said she hadn't slept in 2 years and she needed a nap. You know, and she was right, you know, it was awful, you know, it was the things that I put my family through. You know, she said, if there's a P.O. box and if you'd like to write it, you know, they'll help you. And so I had one envelope. I'm going to tell you, my co-defendant, the girl that I came home and I followed, you know, and when she said we were going places, back to the penitentiary wasn't on my list, but that's exactly where we went. Was it time for church? I heard them. Okay. Anyways, squirrel. But yeah, we went back to prison, you know, so now we're both in prison. And I had no friends, I had no family, and I had a free envelope. And I'm going to tell you, when they talk about the honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, I had to have just a shred of willingness before I could even get honest or even be open-minded. I didn't want to be sober. Okay, they gave me that envelope, and my willingness came for I wanted somebody to write me. I'm not going to say, like, oh, yeah, I just had this epiphany. I wanted somebody to write me. And I wrote that P.O. box, and then on November 14th of 2014, a girl named Amanda, who was an alcoholic just like me, and who was a nurse just like me, and who had gotten better through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, offered to help me. And didn't want anything from me. She sent me a big book in the mail, and she walked the steps with me through the mail, you know. And I just remember thinking maybe that I wouldn't die like this, you know. I was willing to do whatever it took. Like, you wanted me to write, I had to write the homework down, I had to make a copy of it, and I had to send it to her. Then she would send it back with corrections, you know. She put money on the phone so I could get in the habit of calling. I will tell you, right before I turned myself into the county jail, my sister pulled some strings and got me a bed at the Edna House for Women, which is a structured 6-month sober living program. And because I was dishonest and I wasn't willing to take suggestions, I left after 5 days. My sister lost her bail money, and I lost my bed there. When I went to court begging the judge, please send me to treatment, he said, why would I send you to treatment? You were just at the best treatment place and you left. And he was right. So now I'm in prison, though, and I'm through my steps. I'm sponsoring other women there, and it's coming time to come home, and I know a place to go. So it was either the women's shelter. It was going to be a halfway house where girls were drinking in the bathroom, or I begged the Edna House to give me a bed, and they did. And I was released from the Edna House May 5th of 2016, and my sponsor picked me up. She took me by hair bag because my roots were atrocious. I ate some french fries and away with my clear plastic bag of belongings and went to the Edna House with humility and gratitude. You know, they made fun of me. They're like, nobody's so grateful for Forbes. I'm like, dude, you don't know. Like, nobody's so grateful for toilet paper. Like, you don't know. You know, like, there's there's always toilet paper here, you know? And those are the things that, you know, I really had to get. I feel like God had to lay me flat out on my back to get me to look up. And you know what? I never quit doing the things. You know, when I talk this morning, the 24-hour day book, because I got sober and sleep with it, you know, really a lot of traditional alcoholics moms there. You know, it was one of the main hubs where AA started. Founders Day was very close to where I was from. And, you know, it says, watch all your beginnings. And I have stuck with that. You know, I got a job hanging pants in a factory. I couldn't get a job. Burger King wouldn't even hire me. My sponsor's like, yeah, because maybe you're going to steal their cash register. Like, you're a thief, Nikki. People don't want to hire you, you know. Like, you have to take a look at that. And they were right. She was right, you know. So, anyways, I got a job hanging pants. Yet in the house, I got to go to a meeting 7 days a week and work a full-time job and ride the bus 1 hour each way to work 5 days a week. And I was stumped in the office. I'm like, who the hell is this? They're like, women who want to stay sober. So when I work with women and they tell me I can't do that, what I hear is, I won't. See, because I was willing to go to any lengths to get better. And at the beginning, I wasn't. And I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't willing to go to any lengths. Today, it has maintained my thing. I'm going to tell you guys, this is way past my bedtime. I don't know what time. It's like 10 after 8. I've already got my teeth brushed, my cats are tucked in, and I am in the bed. But Alcoholics Anonymous told me to never say no to AA in a service commitment, okay? Because there's nowhere I would rather be than in a meeting of AA. If somebody would have told me 8 years ago that my life would be so good, I would have laughed. I lost my nursing license. And today I have an application pending with the Board of Nursing. They may not give it to me. They may. I show up and I do the work and I'm not attached to the results. You know, I meet with my sponsor on a regular basis. She probably thinks I'm cuckoo because I call her every day. But you know what? It works in the beginning. I'm still going to continue to do it. You know, I moved to California through Alcoholics Anonymous. I met my best friend and my wife. We moved out here 3 years ago. You know, I was a counselor for a while when I learned through self-care. So I had some times in sobriety where I didn't really do a lot of self-care, and things got really bad. I got fired in sobriety. You know why? Because I was working a two-step program. I was going to meetings, and I was doing service work. I wasn't doing anything else in between. And I don't know about anybody else, but my prayer life sucked, and I wasn't taking a look at character defects, and I wasn't doing any kind of 11-step meditation, and I surely wasn't doing a 10-step inventory, and ego and pride and greed snuck up on me, and I thought I was all that in a bag of chips, and I got fired from a recovery job. This is the thing. I dragged my butt to meetings, and I talked about it as much as I could because they said a problem shared is a problem cut in half. And I kept talking about it until people were just like, icky, nobody wants to hear about it. The thing of it was is that I needed to talk about it, and this was my safe place, you know? What I learned from that is that I have character defects that I need to ask God for help for. You know, left up to my, it's not okay enough for me to just not drink. It's not okay. That's not enough. Like, there's so much more to my life than just not drinking. The things that I have gotten from working a program, you know, peace of mind, love, self-esteem, you know, self-care. Like, I never used to know how to self-care because I was so busy putting oxygen masks on everybody else and I was dying. I couldn't set any healthy boundaries. AA taught me that. The women in my life taught me that, you know. You know, so I was a counselor for a while, and I, you know, I was able to step back from that. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, I just got a job. I'm back in a clinical setting. I'm working as a telemetry technician using my nursing background while I wait for the Board of Nursing, you know. But this is the thing. I'm not attached to a result. If they give me a license, that'll be fantastic. And if they don't, it's okay, too. You know, because I just show up and I just do the work, you know. I sponsor women, and I'm going to tell you, like, if you know anybody who sponsors somebody, you know that sometimes it's a challenge. But the big book says nothing like intense work with another alcoholic ensures immunity against the next drink. So that book is my design for living. I take what, you know, people say a lot of things. Oh, you can't lead till you're a year sober. You can't do this. Show me in the book. Because I'm a show me in the book kind of girl. And those things in the book, you know, they're true, right? If I do these things, it says, I will know happiness. I will know peace. You know, the experiences, no matter how far down the scale I've gone, will benefit others. And I have seen those promises tenfold happen in my life. What I do today. So I wake up every morning, and before my feet hit the ground, as long as a cat, I have 5 cats. I've crossed the threshold. That's another thing. I'm able to take care of living beings. Because I couldn't take care of plants, guys. I can take care of animals, which, you know, I could never have said that before. I ask God to get in my head before I do. Because I don't know about anybody else, but this place is a circus. And if I don't get the music to turn down, sometimes it's hard to get a thought in. I watch my coffee maker, and this is my routine. I push the start button, I bow my head, and I say the third step prayer because I ask for God's will to be done in my life. You know, I do a gratitude list. I have several sponsees that text me gratitude lists. This is what we do, you know. I read a morning meditation because I need something to fill my spirit. You know, it's so easy for all. Oh, my gosh, you guys, there's so many things that are going on that can get in there, really take away our peace and joy. I want to read this because this morning this really spoke to my heart. It says the meditation for the day. I will try to help others, and I'll try not to let a day pass without reaching out an arm of love to someone. Each day, I'll try to do something to lift another human being out of the sea of discouragements into which he or she has fallen. My helping hand is needed to raise the helpless to courage, to strength, to faith, to health. And in my own gratitude, I will turn and help other alcoholics with the burden that is pressing too heavily upon them. God didn't get me sober for me. I did nothing to deserve the sobriety and the gifts that I have. It's grace. And I believe that he extended that grace so I could extend it to others. You know, I just can't believe, you know, my life. It's just, you know, and it's not dependent on things. You know, I used to think if I had the car, if I had the house, if I had all these things, I'd be happy. And you know what? Living in a sober house, I had enough money to pay my bills. I had like an $800 car, and I had sobriety, and I had peace of mind, and I had a God in my understanding, and that was all that I needed. You know. That's it. And I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anonymous, and if nobody told you that they love you today, I love you.
Hey, Steve, we are now starting the discussion part of the meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible, so please limit your sharing to allow for this. I will now turn the meeting back over to our chairperson, Nikki, to pick people to share.
So this is the people that are online, and then this right here is the people that are in person, and you just pick on.
Do they, like, put their hands up or
no,
anything?
No, it's just people.
God worked through them for us being a blessing, And like I said, it is great that it's been with us. And thank you for sharing with us. You know, you give me a lot of insight from the things I basically knew. So thank you much for all that. And my name is Marshall, and this is my 22nd day show.
Thanks, Marshall. So I'll be honest, I'm not really comfortable picking on anybody. Does anybody just want to share? Because otherwise I have to pick on people, I guess.
Hey, Nick, let me share. Oops, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Whoever?
Yeah, only because I have to go to bed. It's 20 after 11 here. So I don't care. Wait. Nikki's mom. Thank you, Nick. I love sharing your story. I love sharing your life. I love this part of the journey better than the other. And I, every moment of that time now is precious to me. I saw you more than any parent should ever see the child. Half an hour a day, every other weekend in a room. But thank you. You inspire me. You inspire others. You're just awesome. And with that, I'm going to say good night. I will see you next Friday. Night, folks.
Who else? Was there somebody online that wanted to share?
Yes, I'm Carol, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm another 11:20 at night person. And I want to thank you, Nikki, for your amazing message that you covered so many things. And I wish I had had a piece of paper to jot them down. But you talked about you need to do more than just not drink for your sobriety. And that's so true. And today I know that God asked me to seek him every day. And it depends on my relationship with God today. And, you know, this is my third meeting today. And you know what? I'm sitting here thinking, well, I might be an alcoholic because I'm looking forward to hearing the message and to having others, my higher power speaking through all of you. And you said so many things and happy birthday. And I am off for the night, but just thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. And you speak the language of the heart. And I hear your voice catch when you talk about gratitude and humility. And it just reminds me of how grateful I am to know you and to be sober today. Thank you.
Samantha B. I got down on a holiday. Hi, Sam. That I
have the right decision regardless of how that looks. Like, can we burn our house? Like, yeah, let's check that. The answer is right. I have never put the right part of my house in the street for us. And I can explain to you why that's a great idea. And I can also have you believe that it was your idea. And so today I'm not like that. Today I'm like, yeah, I know I just made a mistake. And that's because of this program. And like, I do still have a long way to go. I have a lot of things that I want to achieve. There's a lot of things I want to, like, conquer. And there's not a doubt in my mind that in this program I have that ability. I work with my sponsor. I try to work with a weekly, but good lady, she's been getting on the so. But, you know, I'm taking my time. I'm doing this. It's a primary purpose way of doing it early. And I've been able to catch myself, like, feeling like I rushed through something and being like, oh, hold on, wait, gotta pay you back. Like, I rushed and I don't feel like I'm completely thrilled with it. I'm sure I'm really obnoxious with this one thing. You know, it's great that today I have somebody in my life who's really like, oh, I can't have to sit around with that. That I still have anything else to do. It's, you know, my life's far from perfect, but I'm so far from where I was when I started. And, you know, like, in my addiction, I really reduced myself to a standard in life that was far below what I thought I would ever set. And, you know, I was actually talking to my grandma the other day. I kind of gave my grandma, like, my story. And she's like, I don't understand how your drug addiction started or how you started drinking so much. And so I'm like, okay, well, let me give you all my justifications that I have had for why I did. And so it was nice to be able to sit down and talk to her and explain that to her. Like, she's really grateful to see where I'm at now. But, you know, it, like, 9 months ago, I thought I was living my best life and sitting over here. You know, that's a lot more than I can say for pretty much almost my whole life. I don't think I've ever been just at peace with myself and happy with myself. Like, I don't look in the mirror and hate myself. I look in the mirror and hate myself. Whatever it is, it's far from perfect, but today life is pretty amazing. And I have this program to think about my supposed to say.
Monica.
I'm going to call it that.
Hey, Monica.
Hi, Monica.
Congratulations on taking me back. I randomly decided to do this today. I definitely have realized I need more of in-person. But yeah, your story, I've always gotten a lot of what you have to say. One part stuck out to me when you said, like, they had started to live in that thing. And I relapsed, like, 6 months ago or so. And I remember, it was November 16th, I decided I wanted to live. Because my relapse lasted 5 days, guys, which are surprised to last about a month, because I had a tumor in my fault. And I remember waking up and wanting to live, and it was the strangest thing because the events the night before were so, like, horrific to me. I should really be dead and or arrested. And I don't know how I walked away, but, like, finally I was pretty messed up. But I don't know. It was like my whole bit of clarity. That's really what it was. It was just like, you could take this a bit and, like, burn shit down, or you can, like, try to take your way out, or try to get out, you know? And so I did that, and it was, let me tell you, the whole relapse, you know, in my head, I was just like, you know, what solution do I have? No solution. So I'll just drink when I call myself anyway. And, like, I thought that at least the alcohol would, like, kill the shit in my head. It didn't at all. It was, like, louder and more, like, you know, festering. And, I went to the meeting. I remember going to the board meeting, and people were like, are you okay? And then I think I relapsed the next day. And, like, I showed up to meeting still, and I was still, but in my head I was gone, you know? And, yeah, I crazy that it's been 6 months and I could look back at that note and be like grateful for it. Because at the time I was like, why would this happen? The most worst thing ever. And now I'm just like grateful for it because if it wasn't for that terrible shit happening, like I would have decided to get sober and it would be alive today. Because people were like, can you say this came through? I was like, yeah, I did. I was going to lose my apartment. I'm going to lose my job. I don't give a fuck about nobody. Like, it doesn't matter, you know? And so it was like all of a sudden, you know, like, I think I took 2 months off of work. I got to go back to my job, you know? Like I wasn't even supposed to have that opportunity, you know? I negotiated a raise. Like a month ago, like, that's not me, that's not shit I give you, know, but, like, I feel, like, so happy, this is my third time, you know, but, like, I know that when I keep Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did the work, it worked, and I felt the best that I did inside, and I'll never be, because I kept thinking, like, oh, it's been so well, like, for those people who only had, like, 5.5 years, like, and I thought, like, you know, that, like, I had to do a lot of work on myself, but there were some hidden things in there that I guess I wasn't ready to look at, and now it's like, I'm totally uncovering that. I'm doing my major work on myself, and I'm like, so, it sucks a lot, but I never thought that it'd be at, like, I think you said she's a mom, she's a mommy or something. I never thought that I would have that. You know, and I do, I feel like, I have a lot of shame about, like, what I did and what happened, and I don't feel that no more, like, you mentioned promises in it about, like, how your experiences are going to help other people, and I don't normally hear, I'm not sharing what that experience was, but I know that if something were to come to me, like, I have it, because I've heard it a lot, so, yeah, but I'm so glad to
Thanks, Monica. Is there anybody online that wants to share?
My name's Dawn. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. I want to say thank you so much, Nikki, for speaking tonight and for being a dear friend. It's good to hear your story and the fact that it can impact so many other people's lives. I think that's one of the things that I like about Alcoholics Anonymous is it's just a bunch of alcoholics getting together, sharing our experience, strength, and hope, and giving each other courage and strength to make it another day. I got sober in October of 1987. I was sober for 17 years, and I only share this because I want to really, it just brought it up to me when you were sharing how cunning, baffling, powerful, and patient alcoholism is. And after 17 years of working a program, not to the best of my ability, honestly, I drank. And I fought really, really hard after relapsing to get any time again. And I can remember I was still going to meetings though. I was drinking and going to meetings and because I knew that's where I needed to be and I didn't know where else and I didn't fit in anywhere else, but I couldn't stop. So I just kept going and drinking and it was kind of crazy. I remember I went to a meeting and they said, if you've used in the last 24 hours, please don't share. And so I could never share. I mean, because it was like for months, I could never share. And it was like, this is ridiculous. So finally, I was able to get sober again and got 4 years and relapsed again. And I thought, I just don't know. I relapsed that time only for a weekend. But I thought, I just don't know what's going on. Why can't I stay sober? Because really, really bad things, like a lot of people, happen to me when I'm drinking and the consequences are huge. So I was able to get right back. And what was funny was I talked to my sponsor. I was in a blackout for the whole weekend, and I talked to my sponsor during that time. So I thought, well, if I talked to my sponsor, I guess I didn't really relapse. You know, somehow or another, it, you know, I was in touch, so therefore it doesn't count. But, you know, I think what I have found this time around, I've been sober 8 years this month, is that for me it all came down to honesty. I wasn't able to be honest with myself or anyone else. And until the time came when, because I was doing the serving, I was doing the meeting, I was doing everything I thought I was supposed to be doing, and but I wasn't being honest. I would just lie about the stupidest little things. My sponsor would give me homework. She'd ask if I did it. I'd say yes, and I hadn't. I mean, just dumb stuff. Just, you know, but those things are the things that are going to keep me out there, because I just can't. I need emotional sobriety in order to have physical sobriety for me. And if I'm emotionally not sober for a certain period of time, it starts eating away at my physical sobriety. And that's something that I just can't afford to have happen in my life today. So I've grabbed on with a desperation much stronger than I have felt before. And I can only hope that one day at a time my higher power will allow me to stay clean and sober. And it's, you know, people like you, Nikki, and other friends that I have in my life that I know that I can call whenever I'm feeling crazy and have that music going. And that's, you know, that can put me back into reality. And with that, I just want to say thanks again.
Thanks, Tom.
Hi,
Susie. Right now, I just want to say a little thing about what I went through in 6 months. Every day I look at the mirror, at the woman in the mirror. I see this as a little girl. She is hurt and shy and very successful because she was in an abusive relationship with me. Very successful, and he was strong. And he was like me. He was emotionally physical abusive. And I became an alcoholic in the end of me. I started to lose myself. But I continued to pray and to get out of it. That day finally came. I felt like a kind of escape. But in the process, I lost my son. I was grateful because I knew I couldn't provide for him after what his dad put me through. I needed to better myself by myself so I could be the mother I needed to be for him. His dad went down and I did an inpatient for 2 months and now I'm doing outpatient. Now when I look at the mirror and I see a strong, positive, loving, and accepting woman, I'm full of joy that I lost during that time. There is here in this evening helps me find myself and turn me into the woman I needed to be to be the mother. And but now my son has finally got his mother back and I found my life. Now I tell myself I'm proud of you. Now I look at myself in the mirror and tell myself I'm proud of you. You came a long way and you didn't give up. You are a survivor. Thank you.
What's your name, miss?
My name is Jonathan Morrell. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Josh.
Privileged to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to welcome anybody new. I'd like to welcome you to the opportunity of a better way of life. I want to welcome anybody who has a bottle in their trunk right now in case it gets fucking bad enough. Welcome you to a process that changed my life. Thank you for your meeting. Wow. One more really quick. If you recently relapsed, I want to welcome you and I want to tell you that I am grateful that you didn't fucking die. Because that's the reality and severity, right? I Googled it before. It might have changed after the last 2 years of people being shut into their house. But 2 years ago, it's 487 people die from this disease a day. So the hour and a half that we've been sitting here, seven people will never breathe again thanks to this disease. that's just severity of Alcoholics Anonymous. And those are the lucky ones. There are those, like you were sharing, and my experience, that are doomed to suffer the alcoholic death, right? The inability to get sober, the inability to die, the inability to ever have a shot, just stuck in the misery of the next drink. And I too related a lot when you were sharing about lining up in that place that you told yourself you were never going to fucking go again with that super thin mattress and those people telling you how to behave and the toilet paper that the guard would tease you with under the door and wondering, how the fuck did I get here? How did I get here again? I was doing everything that I was supposed to. And I'm the alcoholic that tells myself at 7 o'clock in the morning I'm not going to drink. By 12 o'clock, I'm drunk. By 4 o'clock, I'm in the trap house. And by 8 o'clock, I'm in prison. And every single time, I was not going to drink. I didn't understand. I love it when I hear members share about their past experience and then clarify that is not why I'm an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I was abandoned. I'm not an alcoholic because I went to prison. I'm not an alcoholic because I lost my kids. I'm not an alcoholic because I lost my job. I'm an alcoholic because I can't stop fucking drinking on my own. It does something different to me than it does to other people. And it promises me things, and it fails every single time. And I go back to it once again and once again. I don't want it. I'm about 3-4 months sober. Actually, my sobriety date is 7/20/2019. It's not my fucking fault. And that was directly following a 5-day relapse. I got back in action with my sponsor, got connected, and told myself, what am I going to do different? And what I've done different is I have enjoyed this gift every single day. Because it's a gift, man. I don't deserve it. I wasn't promised it. It doesn't belong to me. And I work a third step to the best of my ability, which means this isn't my life anymore. So what am I going to be sitting at home selfish about, trying to say my problems are more important than the other alcoholic who's suffering? I work a third step. It's not my life. I gave this life to a power greater than myself. And now it's my job to say, hey, what do you want me to do? Now, I'm far from perfect. I like to cuss at people while I drive down the road. I like to come up with excuses as to why I don't need to go to that meeting. I fail to do step work, even though it gives me a relief every single time. And then I get myself into this place of, like, utter disappointment. And I start complaining. And then I come into a meeting and I hear the gratitude. And another member of Alcoholics Anonymous voice went through shit. It was the same exact thing, right? Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. God, I remember that phone call asking for more money. Which was weird because every other time I'd ever gone to jail, I never made any calls. I knew that they were going to give me money. Right? My family talked to me behind locked doors and my friends acted like they weren't home. So there was nobody to call. And then this time, right, I had been sober a couple of times. And I hadn't gotten in trouble in a couple of years. And then this time, just like you said, right, like normal people would realize, hey, maybe I have a problem, right? Like when I burned down the house in a methamphetamine psychosis where I thought I heard voices in the attic trying to kill my family and I was in jail, you think that would have been enough? But the first thing I did was try to trade something to get something to change how I felt. And grandma started sending me money. Like I didn't even ask for it. She just started sending me. And after about 2 or 3 months of white knuckling it, somebody gave me some. And then all of grandma's money started going 3 bumps over. Right? Every single bit of money that she sent, 3 bumps over. Here it is. Here it is. Can I have some toothpaste? And then I made that phone call, right? Because I needed more. I wasn't out of money. They just wouldn't give me any more until the rest of the checks cleared. And I remember calling grandma and making up the lie. Right? Like, hey, I was horsing around with this other guy, and we accidentally hit this bunk. He had some of the stuff we weren't supposed to have, and now he wants me to pay it back, and they're going to beat me up, Grandma. And I remember her saying no. I remember her saying no. And I remember walking back to my room, my bunk, and being like, what am I going to do? And I had this moment of clarity that if I didn't do something dramatically different, I was going to be sitting, looking at that bump for the rest of my life. Yeah. And at that point in time, a power greater than myself put me in a position where I transferred yards and I went to this prison and I met my sponsor. Yeah. And he's been my sponsor for the past 6 years now. And we work steps. And that's the first thing he told me. He said, if you want to get sober, we work steps. And if you want to drink, we work steps. And if you want to hurt people, we work steps. And if you want a better way of life, we work steps. And in case you didn't hear me, we work steps. And the steps of relief, my obsession of self, man, I'm no longer concerned with what can I get out of things, what can I get from people, who's a benefit to me. And life is just different. But I randomly came to this meeting. I've been going through a fifth step with my sponsor. It's like my third fifth step this round. And it's really making me get back into meetings. So I have an MO. You know, right around 34 months, I get ungrateful for the gift. Start to separate myself from the fellowship because those people don't even work a program like I do. They don't share the right way. Listen to that motherfucker crosstalk. Right? And, yeah, they did a meeting 2 years. What are they doing? You know, and I get ungrateful. And, this thing becomes a possession. And I fuck possessions up, man. I can show you my car right now, right? It's mine. I own it. And there's problems with it. Why? Because it's a possession, it's not a gift. I run possessions into the road, same as I do relationships. And so I got my ass in a lot of meetings, going to as many meetings as I can. And life isn't that bad, but it could be better. And I know that that's due to my relationship with the power greater than myself. So that's what it's all about. I've shared for way too long. I'm just rambling on right now. There's some stuff that I want to share, but I'm not really sure if it's appropriate. So, I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know,
I'm like an alcoholic.
Thanks.
You over?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Thanks.
This is my first time for you guys to meet. You guys said I need a great part of the fight. I've never seen this moment. My sobriety day is May 14th, back. Before that, I get three overdoses, jails, institutions, and death. I've been up the streets, lacking the needs. Car, I can't be with the stolen. Clothes, my back are stolen. I feel like it's beating. And the seven traditions play well, and I'm here to take the show for the rest. Or shit. What I'm getting at is, I never had a sister. I needed to go to jail because that was actually great. And I was pissed off that I was still alive. And, so I wanted to get to the first time always. Yeah, then we had count beds and rehabs. So I go down to use those kind of bits and I have to pick up like through some part of the game. I don't want to talk very long because this shit probably sits in my mouth, but in order for me to come into the room that from my long life for the kids apart. And they said it was Detox, but it's what they sent it to Detox. They give you an attitude adjustment, which means you're handcuffed and you're in the elevator when you give you an attitude adjustment. in order to get to the size. In the back of my mind, that's all I was there. You can get up, you can go back. Other priests died, so the time was for my fellows. It isn't as nice as it is nowadays. It was just pull your covers right in front of the plate. And I got this. So I did this program. I would go up there and get that ship. And there would be some bastards sitting there going, come for us, my guy. And it's because then that I'm still sitting here today. You know, I really shouldn't be sitting there today. I shouldn't be here. And I can't move me up here in front of the day. You know, the sponsor I had used to say, watch out for the newcomer, see if I'm your sponsor someday. That's how it was like that. One thing that hit me is I've never been a follower. I learned how people in AA taught, so I talked it, so I could get that paper signed. Or I talked it, get somebody up on back. Or I talked it to let somebody, let me back in the house. I'll say to my mother, if you go back in the house, look at me and go to AA. You're not able to say, you don't really care what comes out of your mouth. You want to see your popping out of tongues in the shoe. And what happened to me about me making, actually believing in this program is I had a lot of judgmental issues when I came to the program. And so the university gave me a call and said, I need your help. And the way I thought at that time was, you gave yourself a very deep stuff about it. Why didn't nobody call me? And I went down there and I got this person out of the crack house at originally 2 o'clock in the morning. For Irish boy at 2 o'clock in the morning, it was really good idea. But I went down there and I got this person out of the hospital and I got into a program. I knew that I was powerful super alcohol. My life was a but I didn't leave this guy. And I figured out a program was something to take me. But I did for me what I can't do for myself, and this was changed the way I think. Because of that, I started to do the thing about somebody else besides me. And every time that I would call my sponsor, I'd have a different sponsor. And they're not better than worse than me, but what he would always say is, don't do this call back to the outside. But he was telling you to suck it up, stop your whining, go help somebody else out, and then give me a call. What it meant is, when you go help somebody else out, it's a matter of shit. And I'm being in prison for another day. Drunk and sober, clean and sober, whatever shit you want in my life is going to be. You know, just like somebody else said, I'm ready for the people that are going to come back again. Because there's a hell of a lot of people that don't get that sort of chance. And I'll get over the smoking, not smoking meetings in a while. But I am grateful that you still have coffee. I'm real grateful that you have somebody like me still sit in your seats. And thank you for being our service, and that's it.
Shame. I got time for one more. One more?
So,
sir, excuse you, smile. There, very alcoholic. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, sir.
Hey, Carolee. I never heard your whole story. That was awesome.
Yeah, I really identify. I've never done time. I mean, I've done one night in juvenile hall. That was enough for me. You know what? This has been a great meeting. I am right where I'm supposed to be, and I'm glad you're all here for me. And I'm just, God is working in my life today and doing for me what I surely can't do for myself, and I have that peace today. And when you said that, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, I think I have that. You know? Because I'm such an alcoholic, I want to resist against it. And nothing good can happen for me. And it's just amazing that I'm very grateful, and I have that peace and serenity today. And I don't need all the material whatever. But, you know, I can sit and be with Sarah. Like, Susie was reading that letter. That was powerful, man. You know, keep coming back. This has been a good meeting. Okay. I'm grateful to be here, and I'll thank you. Thank you again.
Thanks, Joe.
All right. Value Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after me.